Good. Welcome, everyone. This is Ann McWalter in our group, who's a physical therapist, and we thought it would be really helpful to do a session on the posture of meditation, which is extremely important, and we don't really have a venue for teaching this. Often if you go on retreat, a longer retreat, sometimes people will work with you, but frankly, I don't think most of us are really trained in that type of body awareness, and unfortunately, that's the case. And it's really, really an important part of meditation, because finding your seat is, I'd say, 50% of the possibility of being present rather than constantly struggling with your position and your place in space. So I wanted to point out this book. It's called The Posture of Meditation by Will Johnson, a practical manual for meditators of all traditions. He's trained as a Rolfer, and interestingly enough, when I read this, I realized there were things that Reggie Ray has taken from this book in his teachings, and we may be doing more with those body-related meditation teachings at some point. So I have this copy, and there's a copy. We'll come back to the library if you want to borrow it. Yes?
Can you say the name of the book?
The name of the book, The Posture of Meditation by Will Johnson, J-O-H-N-S-O-N. A practical manual for meditators of all traditions. Oh, here's the other copy. Thank you. The program tonight, I just wanted to give some basic comments on what's in this book, which was very helpful to me reading it a second time. And then we'll be, Anne will direct us for the next part. And basically, we'll work with people on their individual posture. So I think it's really a great opportunity. So we're taking a little longer for our class today so we can cover everybody. So why does posture matter? Because actually, what we're working with in Buddhism, and when you do a lot of further study, you hear a lot about body, speech, and mind. And also, when I teach basic meditation practice, I talk about body, speech, being working with breath, and mind, working with thoughts. So it's important because we want to feel like we're grounded, either on our chair or on the cushion, in a way that we feel somewhat comfortable, you could say, when we get more used to taking the posture of meditation. And yet also and having a feeling of being alert and awake. That's what we're doing when we meditate. We aren't slouching or lying on the couch. The idea is that when you take the posture of meditation, you're already meditating because the posture itself has a power, I think, to actually intersect or interact with the mind. So the next note was not struggling with the body. It allows the mind to relax and breath to be free and unrestricted. So there we're working also with the breath, in terms of allowing there to be space to breathe. If we're crunched over, it restricts our breathing. So there are many elements that work together, but body, speech, and mind are the three elements that you'll hear repeated over and over in many different ways in basic Buddhist teachings. So it's important to realize that, as you all know, as we know, that every body is different. And it's important not to have you know, certain ideas, like if I can't sit on the floor, I'll never be able to meditate, or the chair is inferior. No, that's not true. Or if you have a problem with your spine and you can't sit up straight, okay, that's just what you have to work with. So in essence, whatever we have is what we bring to meditation. And it's just like whatever we have in our thoughts, we bring that to meditation. And it's, we're not trying to get rid of anything or really change anything. We're just trying to be present and awake. So the posture of meditation really helps us to wake up. So again, you have to find the right position for you. And then what we're going to give are some basic clues. And then from that point, you'll get some help. But also, it's a constant practice of adjustment as as your body changes. So it's very important to take your own physical needs into the meditation practice and into the situation of finding the right spot. So in this book, The Posture of Meditation, he talks about three main points. One is alignment. The second one is relaxation. And the third is resiliency. So that's alignment, relaxation, and resiliency. So the first is alignment. And that's really attention to the force of gravity. And we know that if we're leaning forward, there's a feeling of falling, like that the gravity is pulling us down. Gravity is always a force beneath us. So if we're able to find an alignment that works with gravity, gravity's a support. And we can feel balanced on the earth. So that is really important. And there are some main points I've mentioned before. If you're sitting on a cushion, it's important that the knees are lower than the hips. Well, at least certainly not higher, because then that will tire your back. If you're sitting on a chair, these black cushions that Elise discovered help us keep the hips higher, and Anne will be giving more instruction about the posture sitting in a chair as well. So the first point is alignment, and that requires finding the right base of support. So you'll be working with that, and I encourage you to try different things. It's an experiment. The second point is relaxation, and within that upright posture, you want to find a sense of relaxation. You're not holding or gripping. So the muscles aren't grabbing you and holding you up. Within that upright quality, there's a sense of relaxation as well. So the example he uses here is, and I think of it, at the Tower of London, you've got these guys out there dressed in their full regalia, and they are like at attention. Okay, they're upright, but they don't look all that relaxed. So you're upright but relaxed. So that might be a koan, and you could work with that. But the relaxation is important in that it means you're not holding and clinging and tightening your muscles. And he also talks about surrendering to the pull of gravity. So I guess that just means really working with that sense of, once you find the alignment, you can relax within that pull of gravity, which we don't really think about much or aren't that aware of, but it's very important. The third is resilience. And when we sit, we're not just frozen in space, we're breathing. So what happens when we breathe? Our body is moving. The breath comes in, there's an expansion, the breath goes out, and there's a sense of drawing inward. So the resiliency, the breath is always moving. So the quality of of things moving through us is actually symbolized by the breath or taught by the breath. So breath is movement through the whole body. And he also mentions accepting the sensations that move through the body. So we always, you know, we might feel an itch, we might feel whatever. And working with meditation, we're aware of those sensations and we may address them in some way if we're very uncomfortable, or we may just notice it's just our inner agitation. So all three actually work together, and there's integration there. So he also talks about balance being the posture of meditation. So you're finding balance. Just as when you're walking, you always have a sense of balance. You're balancing as you move through space. So lastly, we're learning to just be present without a struggle. And I think that's really important. We're not struggling. And sometimes it can be like a big struggle to meditate. But once, it's almost like you find your sweet spot. It's interesting when it happens that you actually find a position where you are completely relaxed, awake, upright, and then there's a quality that meditation is happening to you almost. It's just flowing. So the other thing is also I have give up wishing something would be different. So it's also realizing that we're, you know, you go through surgery, you go through other things. You may have had a great time sitting on a zafu, which is the lower cushion, and then you have surgery and you have to sit up higher or in a chair, whatever. It doesn't matter. Whatever it is, we work with that. So it's a matter of being willing to adjust to whatever you need. So I think I'll stop there, and we'll just move on. So are there any questions? I'll pause here for a moment if anyone has any questions about anything I've said so far. Okay, good. Excellent. Anne.
Okay, so when Emily asked me to talk about this, my physical therapy, you know, Western medicine, biomechanical brain kicked in and started saying, okay, we need flexibility in our hips and our knees, and we need to have thoracic extension, and we need to have cervical, da 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 da. And all of which is true if you want to sit in a certain way. And then, you know, I read the book, and I thought it was kind of interesting. I'm just going to add a couple things to what Emily said, because it was very, you know, it's a very, very much connects the mind and the body. And so, you know, even me being a hardcore biomechanical physical therapist, you know, can appreciate, you know, how if you're not balanced on the cushion, for example, or in the chair, how that can decrease your focus and your awareness. And just really trying to tie those things together. There was a couple of interesting quotes. And the other thing about alignment, too, was the, you know, he talked about maintaining the natural curves of the spine, which are going in, it's called a lordosis, but we curve in a little bit in the neck, and then we come back out again in the thoracic spine, and then we go back in again in the lumbar spine. And I thought it was interesting because he said that the curves are where your energy centers or your chakras are located. And so maintaining those spinal curves, if you can, is important. And I think a lot of us can, meaning we have the mobility to get there, but we have a hard time holding it because we don't have the muscle activation and recruitment to hold that posture. We'll talk about that more. And then he made a big point about relaxation being really, relaxation out of the three, alignment, relaxation, resilience, relaxation really being the important one, that's really the key to meditation. Mm-hmm. And because if we can't relax and we have a lot of tension in our body, then that's going to block our awareness of what's going on around us, or the reality. He said that as relaxation expands and tension falls away, we can attain much deeper levels of awareness. And as Emily said, the relaxation allows a much greater connection to the earth. So I just thought, you know, again, coming out from a physical therapist mindset, it was interesting to tie it in to sort of the mind and meditation and things that are important, whether you're talking about meditation or you're just talking about existing in the world, because obviously we sit here on the cushion or whatever, but we want to be able to take that sense of mindfulness out into the world, into what we do, and we want to be able to take that posture with us out into the world as well. So learning the proper posture in a controlled environment like this and getting to practice it here hopefully will help take that. You'll take that out when you walk or you sit elsewhere to help maintain your focus and your awareness and decrease the tension in your body, etc., etc. The result of this, when he was talking about sitting rigidly, sort of like Emily was saying about the guards in London, the result of this physical holding and hardening is a mind filled with involuntary thoughts of attack and judgment, fear, desires, and fantasies.
Interesting. Wow. Wow, that's right.
Wonder if those guards in London know that's all going on. But also talking about, you know, with this sense of resiliency is the sense of, or not sense of, you know, that there is a constant movement, you know, in our body, even when you're sitting still. Whether it's, you know, movement associated with the breath, but also your little stabilizing muscles are working all the time to, you know, make postural corrections. And because of that movement, or, you know, another thing that he says is that with movement, then there's no stable ground for your internal dialogue, so it subsides. So I thought, wow, that's pretty cool.
With movement,
The movement, the resilience. Exactly. Yeah. So that little bit of movement that occurs in your body that you may not even be aware of, certainly nobody looking at you is going to be aware of it. But it's just a little. It's the changes that happen at the joint level. You know, or this is my physical therapy brain anyway. You know, your joints are constantly, particularly in your spine, constantly shifting and moving and adjusting to. Because nobody's going to sit 100% perfectly still.
Right.
So as you shift a little bit one way, then this muscle has to activate and say, nope, don't go there.
Right.
And
too far.
And as you come back, nope, don't go there. And it's, you know, brings you back and forth to help maintain that posture. But I just thought it was cool because I thought, wow, all you have to do is sit still and all that internal self-talk that drives you crazy will go away. It just sounded like a real simple solution. The fruits of meditative practice are a result of letting go of the habit patterns of the mind and the body that interfere with our clear awareness of this present moment. So we have to bring alignment, relaxation, and resilience into our movements and actions in life, which is what I was saying about taking it all out of here when you're off the cushion as well. So anyway, those were just some of the things that you know, I thought were interesting, you know, as a physical therapist reading the book. But biomechanically, if you were to really, you know, go to physical therapy school and, you know, they teach you about a plumb line. So if we were to hang a piece of string from the ceiling, sort of all the different points of the body that should pass through if you have normal posture. Okay. So the biggest ones have to do with where it passes through, because for most people postural problems are from here up. Okay. So being sure that if, you know, a proper posture, if I was standing next to a string coming down from the ceiling, I would want that string to sort of be in line with my earlobe. In other words, I wouldn't want my head here, which is where most people's heads are going to be to some degree. Okay. And I want it to come right through my acromion, which is the tip of your shoulder blade right out here. So I don't want to be here. Mm-hmm. Or likewise, not too many people are here, but I don't want to be here either. Right? So it's a plumb line just gives, you know, actual, if you were really wanting to get picky about sort of how the human body should line up relative to a plumb line, that's how it should be, at least for the upper body, and then the lower body I won't bother talking about. But I think that's really key, and that's probably one of the hardest things for everybody in sitting and meditation, because our lives are all in front of us, right? Mm-hmm. You know, we eat, we brush our teeth, we sit at a computer, so we're constantly going this way. And unless you change light bulbs for a living, we don't live here. You know, we live here. And so our tissues get very adjusted to that position. And that's why it's so hard to, you know, meditation, or even just when somebody comes along and says, sit up straight, it's hard to get there. Because, A, you might not have the mobility to get there because you've stiffened into this position. B, you might be able to get there, but you can't hold it. Or C, you just have no clue where there is. You don't have a sense of body awareness. We call that your proprioception, your sense of where your body is in space. So I think that that's, you know, gives you just a guideline for sort of, if you were trying to think about where should my head and shoulders be, you know, you think like you want that, you know, that earlobe to be back sort of in line with the top of your shoulder here, and you don't want it to be forward here. And in terms of your spine, you want to maintain those normal curves, okay? So this isn't maintaining those curves because I've reversed that lumbar lordosis, okay? And I can't correct what's going on up here if I don't correct this first. In other words, I can't get my head back or correct that rounding of my upper spine. I've got to correct this. Then that helps this come into play. But I can still make my adjustments. And that's why the cushions work so well. Because what the cushions do, and you can just roll up a towel and get the same effect, is it just lifts your pelvis a little bit and tilts your pelvis forward. And by tilting your pelvis forward, it puts you into that position a little more. Okay. Now I don't have to work so hard, okay, because the cushion is putting me there. It's not so much going to correct this. I could still do this if I wanted to. But it just, I don't have to work quite so hard if I've got something that's giving me that little tilt. And it gets those knees below the hips and the trunk centered on the pelvis, those points that that are so important. So, as I said, we need to have, this part of us is usually the problem in sitting meditation. So we have to be able to have the, I don't like the word strength because it's not really a strength issue, although it's more about a lot of us, we're talking about muscles that are teeny, 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 you know.
How about engagement?
Recruitment, engagement, yeah. You know, do we have the ability to recruit the muscles that we need to use? Because the postural muscles, the muscles that help you hold this position, are, in my language, I call them the local stabilizers. They're very, very small. And they're active no matter which direction you're moving or what posture you're in. As opposed to other bigger stabilizing muscles like your abdominals. You know, we all learn, oh, you have back pain, you're supposed to strengthen your abdominals. Okay. But your abdominals are more of what I call global stabilizers. So they're active only when you are contracting, flexing your spine, doing that kind of a motion, okay? Whereas those local stabilizers, those ones that are holding your posture active no matter what position you're in or what activity you're doing, those babies are the ones that you need to work on. Okay.
Where are they?
Well, throughout. So if we were talking about the this part of you, you know, what people like to call the core. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the local stabilizers for that are, you have four abdominal muscles, and the main one that's the local stabilizer is your transverse abdominis. So it runs this way. mm-hmm. horizontally. Okay, your obliques go this way, then there's one here, and then this transverse abdominis. That's the one that makes you skinny. Mm-hmm. So the way you activate that is you just think like you're zipping up pants that are too tight, and you got to pull your stomach in a little bit. Mm-hmm. And that helps to activate that. Okay, or you can think about that those bony prominences on your pelvis, you can think about kind of pulling those in towards each other. Okay. That transverse abdominis has extensions, hooks in all the way around to the fascia of your back. So by contracting that, you're stabilizing your
mm-hmm.
back.
Mm-hmm. That's key.
Okay, so that's the one part of that's this side of the core.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then this side of the core is little muscles called your multipodi, and they just go from one vertebra to another, and they help control rotation of the spine. And then you have your diaphragm and your pelvic floor. Okay, so the pelvic floor you activate by, you know, that's what you activate when you have to go to the bathroom and there's no bathroom around, and you're kind of just pulling in. That's your pelvic floor. Okay, so my pelvic floor, my transverse abdominis, my multifidi, and my diaphragm. Those are the local stabilizers, primary local stabilizers, that help you hold this posture.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also just, the, as I said before, the proprioceptive awareness. So for a lot of people, they don't know. I treated a guy once who worked, and he had two computer screens in front of him all the time. And they were over there.
Mm-hmm.
So he worked like this
all
day long. And when he came in to see me, this is how he's looked at me. I'm here, and he's looking this way. And I said, you know, okay, can you turn your head straight? Yep, there we go, it's straight.
Oh,
he,
I mean,
he had no clue, you know, that this was straight.
Okay.
And when I put him here, he was like, oh, no, no. You know, when you put somebody in a position of a neutral position that they haven't lived in for a very long time, to them it feels like, you know, to him he felt like his head was rotated to the right, even though it was perfectly straight. Because to him, his brain, this was neutral. That's how his little neurons had formed, you know, just like we have, you know, I call them the cross-country ski trails in your head. Whether it's, you know, everything that we do, everything that we think, is all conditioning, right? So the way, if I sit like this all the time, okay, or if I, you know, think something bad about somebody, I almost said a bad word. if the more you think negative thoughts, or, you know, the more you do something a certain way, your brain forms that way. So this nerve goes to this nerve, and it releases a certain chemical, and this one goes to this one, and you form the cross-country ski trails in your head.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way that you're going to change that, whether it's something that, a way that you think, okay, or a way that you're sitting, is to actively do it a different way. And now you're going to form a new cross-country ski trail. You're going to get new neural connections. So if this is your way that you're used to sitting, or this is the way you're used to sitting, your brain is very programmed that way. Okay, for you, that's it. But I've got to consciously say, nope, I'm going to do something different. Ann says that this is where I should be, and even though that doesn't feel right, that's where Ann says it should be. So I'm going to practice that. 10 seconds later, I'm going to be back here again. But I'm going to correct it back up again. And then the more you do that, the more those cross-country, you start grooving those new cross-country ski trails. That's just the proprioceptive part, the awareness part. If you don't, like, this guy, you know, he'd been here for so long, his tissues were tight. You know, I had to work a little bit to even get him to here, because he had soft tissue restrictions. So it's not just an issue of awareness, it's also an issue of can you physically even get there? Can somebody passively place you there? Or have you been like this for so long that upper thoracic spine can't get back up. So that's what I think the main postural issues are. Like if we went around the room, although I know for a fact that there's a couple of you that have bigger postural issues that are, you know, off just from watching people. But most people have, you know, this, you know, or they have the, you know, the dropped shoulders. And again, that's because this is where our life is. Okay. So that's where, you know, if I come around, I can help you bring that up. I did actually put together, I have to figure out how to email it. There's a, when I was working, I had access to a program on the computer where I could put exercises together into an exercise program. And fortunately, that program doesn't know that I'm on disability and I'm not working anymore, and it's the only program that doesn't know that. Seems like everybody else does. I was shut out of everything. But I can still have access to this, so I can still put some exercises together, which
I did.
I just have to figure out if I can now email it, you know, to the group. And basically what I did was I just put in some exercises to work on getting out of this position. Okay, so when we do this, basically we're taking that inward curve of the neck and we're reversing it. We're going this way. Okay. But if I let my head go with my spine, I'd be looking at the floor like this. So what we do instead is we pick our head up. So we're kind of backward bent way up high here.
Oh, yeah.
But we're rounded in the majority of your cervical spine. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So we have to get these muscles right at the base of the skull stretched out so I can get out of that backward bend. And we've got to get these guys to pull me up so I can get back to that normal curve. So there's a couple exercises in there, which one's really simple. It's just retracting your head back as far as you can and then trying to drop your chin down towards your throat. Not your whole head, because think about, this is our pivot point way up here, like right below your ears. Or through your ears, if that's easier to think about. So I'm just doing that. But I have to get my head back into that neutral position first. I have to get my neck correct that inward curve. And just dropping down. Sometimes it's helpful to do it lying down. Put a towel or something underneath your head. And know that you're going to bring your chin towards your throat, but your head can't come off the towel. Because what most people end up doing is they lift their head. But you really want to keep the pivot point up here. Or you can do it standing against the wall. Because then you've got that feedback. And then go, just do this rather than this.
Mm-hmm.
So my pivot point's way up here.
Would that be what we say when we say chin tucked in? Do you think that would be similar?
Well, people use that term differently. So chin, for some people, in my world anyway, this is a chin tuck. And for some people, this is a chin tuck.
I see. Okay. That's confusing.
But so there's two parts, and some people call chin tuck one part or the other. So I don't call either one either. I just say pull your chin back and then drop it towards your throat. Not to say that that's the position you should sit in. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying using that as a way to elongate those little muscles right up at the base of the neck. Because for most of us, they're shortened because we live here. I'm exaggerating, but somewhat there. Then, if you keep coming down into that thoracic spine, so I'm sitting in the back row there, so of course I'm not meditating, I'm looking at everybody's posture. And, you know, pretty much, you know, I couldn't see the folks in the front, really. But, you know, even the people sitting in the chair, you know, which is part of the reason, I think, you know, to try to sit away from the back of the chair. Because, you know, if you sit back against the chair, most likely you're not going to stay here. You're going to relax a little. And when I relax, think about that inward curve in my back.
Yeah.
Right? So if I had a pillow right here on the Kenzie roll, to help me stay up, then that would be better. But without that pillow, most likely I'm gonna reverse those curves.
Where does the pillow go, Anne?
Right in that inward curve. Mm-hmm. So you can take a towel and roll it up.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can go on Amazon and type in McKenzie Super Roll. And it's Robin McKenzie was a physical therapist in Australia who had this whole school of thought regarding practice. But he made these great little pillows. You can get them at Relax the Back too, and then you don't have to pay the shipping. But they're cheaper on Amazon as long as you're ordering something else and you don't have to pay the shipping. But it's just a little cylindrical roll, and you just put it right behind your ear.
Mm-hmm.
And in the car, movie theater, airplane, those are the three worst seats.
Mm-hmm.
But here, you know, and then that will help you, along with the tilt, the slanted cushion will help you. Ideally, you just have enough activation of those local stabilizers that you can sit here and you don't need the external supports. But that takes some work,
mm-hmm.
learning to activate those and building their endurance. Mm-hmm. So it's not an issue of strength, really. People don't have back pain because their trunk muscles are weak. Okay. They have back pain because their stabilizers don't have the endurance to hold them up or to hold them in the right posture for as long as they should.
Mm-hmm. And if you're sitting forward on the chair, do you get more support from your legs too? Is that another positive about being...
That's a good question. Do you get more stability from your legs? I don't think so. I mean, assuming your feet are on the floor.
Right.
I think really most of it, because from my pelvis down is pretty stable. It's not going to go anywhere because I've got my body weight stabilizing my pelvis. I suppose it takes a certain amount of active... I don't even know that, because if you think of the line of gravity,
mm-hmm.
so gravity's coming down like this. So assuming my lower legs are straight, my lower legs are right in line with gravity. So they're not going to have a tendency to go one way or the other because they're right in line with gravity. If I keep my pelvis aligned, that's going to be right in line with gravity. So I think the only thing that really has to work is more your core and your neck.
The other thing is if you have really long legs, your knees end up higher than your hips
right. And
sitting in some chairs. So I have to tuck my feet back so that my knees drop so that I can keep proper posture.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
Or sit in a higher chair. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or if you're really short, like me, you have to
put a stool.
Yeah. There's something on the floor right underneath.
You know, when I sit up, I'm really long for my upper body, but I get tired.
Mm-hmm.
So is that, would the McKenzie roll sort of help with that, or do you just try to work with the fact that you get tired and...
Well, I think both. So I think the McKenzie roll just helps you because, this position, it puts a huge load on primarily on the discs in your spine,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is why you're not supposed to pick things up this way,
mm-hmm.
you know, et cetera. So the McKenzie roll just helps you stay passively, holds you in that neutral position.
Yeah.
In addition to that, though, I would want you doing some stabilizing exercises to try to activate those stabilizers
mm-hmm.
so that you can hold that position
right.
as well.
And you don't have to rely then on it.
Exactly.
Control.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Okay.
So we can, I can come around. I don't know how we want to do this.
Yeah.
One other thing, too, though, is if you have pain... Or you have any pathology, meaning, you've had some surgical fusion of your spine, or anything that's biomechanically off. All of this is trickier because that stuff, all those things, the pain decreases your ability to activate these muscles, and that's another reason why. We struggle with back pain is because those muscles don't, as your back pain gets better, those muscles don't automatically, those stabilizer muscles don't automatically start to get better. So that's why the back pain recurs, or one of the reasons the back pain recurs. Because unless you've worked on those real little local stabilizers, in all likelihood, there's still a problem there. And the back pain's going to come back. So if you have pain, or if you have some pathology, it just makes things a little harder, because it's a lot harder to activate those muscles.
We used to have a practice in the past in the meditation hall where someone was assigned to actually go around and work with people's posture. They would periodically come and just check, and if somebody needed help, they'd just come over and help slightly adjust so people would get understand when they were, because people forget even how they get out of shape, you know, how they get in these difficult positions, and that often helped.
Yeah, I think that's a
great idea. A lot of us aren't really well trained in how to do that, and a lot of people don't really know how to correct or help or get to the core or kind of the heart of the problem with individuals. So how should we proceed at this point?
Well, we can help each other, you know, so if we go back to thinking about...